My name is Brianna Mezick. I'm an epidemiologist in the Department of Epidemiology and Community Health at Virginia Commonwealth University. And today I'll be talking to you about a project that I was working on with several colleagues who are here in the room today at the University of Michigan, looking at trying to understand the role of stressful life events, health behaviors, race, and depression. First, I'd just like to acknowledge my co-authors, in particular James Jackson and Bill Eaton, as well as my other colleagues. I don't have any financial things to disclose, although I realized this morning I forgot that slide. For my talk, I'm going to start out with three observations, and I mean the term observation here, and just as you did when we took logic classes, sort of three things that I'm going to argue are true. And if these three things are true, I'm going to argue that we need to sort of reconceptualize how we think about how stress, poor health behaviors, and are related, and particularly in terms of depression. And finally, I'll discuss the implications of this, our sort of this new model of what we're thinking about as in terms of an efforts to reduce health disparities. So three observations. The first observation is that socioeconomic status, whether indicated by educational attainment, income, occupational status, or wealth, is patterned by race in the United States. This is a slide by Tom LeVeast from a few years ago. I've circled the bars here are African Americans. This plot here is income. The next one is poverty rates. This one here is educational attainment. And the final panel D over here is wealth. And you can see that for all of these outcomes, African Americans fare worse than non-Hispanic whites. The difference is most striking for wealth, which is this bottom here. And I think no one in this room would argue that race and class are commingled in the state or in our country. The second is that cardiovascular disease and metabolic conditions are inversely related to socioeconomic status and also more common among blacks relative to non-Hispanic whites. This is just a plot of the prevalence of cardiovascular disease by education, and you can see there's these nice stepwise curves. I could have shown you any other outcome. This could be diabetes, this could be hypertension. It would all look the same. This is the prevalence of diabetes by age, race, and sex. You'll see that at every age group after age 45, that African-American men and women have higher rates of type 2 diabetes relative to whites. And again, this could be almost any outcome. And the third observation is that depression is also inversely related to socioeconomic status. However, the prevalence is similar, or it's less common among blacks relative to whites. So this is socioeconomic status and the incidence of depression. This vertical line, this is just from a meta-analysis by Laurent and colleagues a few years ago. The vertical line is an odds ratio of 1, which would be no effect. You can see that everything's on the right side, or the pooled estimate is on the right side of 1. This is for the persistence of depression, so people of lower socioeconomic status are twice as likely to have persistent depression relative to those with higher socioeconomic status. And this is a chart of every nationally representative sample that is used a diagnostic, fully structured survey to assess the prevalence of depression. And in every one of these studies, African Americans have lower prevalence of depression relative to non-Hispanic whites. This slide represents over 60,000 people. It represents 4 different instruments and spans over 25 years of time. Now, there have been 2 general explanations as to why this is. The first is that it's measurement error. That we're not capturing what it means to have depression if you're black relative to whether if you're white. And I think I believed that for a long time too, until the NSAL, this one over here the National Survey of American Life came out, which is the only nationally representative sample of African Americans, Caribbean blacks, and non-Hispanic whites who live in predominantly African American census tracts came out, and they had a sample size of about, 8,000 African Americans. So if anybody had the power to determine whether or not this is sort of just measurement error, they did, and they didn't find it. And when we do sensitivity and specificity analyses and sort of really compare doing clinical reappraisals, we really don't find any evidence that this difference is entirely explained by measurement error. The second reason that people will generally give for this is that this is due to positive coping. this is social support, this is religion, this is any number of sort of positive coping strategies that African Americans are somehow more likely to engage in, or sort of simply engage in a different way, and that's why depression is lower. However, we also don't see good evidence of that in terms of being able to explain this, entirely explain this difference. And the other thing is, the thing that would make us sort of question that is that religion and social support, those things are also protective for mortality. They're protective for diabetes. They're if you have a strong social network, you're less likely to die of a heart attack. Well, so we need a factor. That factor would say that people who are both really engaging in these positive coping strategies should have lower risk of depression and lower risk of heart disease and diabetes and all these other things I've told you about. But that's not what we see. And so based on this sort of paradoxical finding in the literature that African Americans are disproportionately overrepresented in lower socioeconomic strata, people in lower socioeconomic strata are disproportionately experience chronic health conditions like cardiovascular disease and diabetes, and also depression, except with this funny finding with race, we were motivated to test a different type of model to understand why this is happening. So I'll tell you about it. This is my schematic of how the world works. We have social structures and context. By that I mean race, class, gender, what have you. Those things are associated with different types of chronic stress, different likelihoods of being exposed, or different quality of stress. Stress is related to both depression and medical conditions, and also engagement in poor health behaviors. And the blue line here is the only thing that everybody agrees on, that if you smoke, eat the wrong foods, drink too much, and don't exercise, that you will get sick. And the rest of this is all non-causal, like that's sort of what we observe. The model that's generally been assumed to explain sort of why we see patternings by class, at least in the United States, is this mediation model, in which social structures and context are a source of stress. Those stressful experiences through physiologic and psychological disruptions produce depression. They also produce medical conditions, and there may be some sort of causal relationships between these two, but this model doesn't even necessarily need that in order to sort of explain that. And this model would argue, or this model would predict, rather, that individuals in social structures and contexts that are associated with higher levels of stress would have higher levels of both depression and medical conditions. But as I just told you, that's not what we observe when we look at African Americans and their rates of depression and medical conditions. So again, this is what we observe. And this is our model that I'm going to tell you about today, this behavioral moderation model. This model argues that chronic stress is a cause of depression, is also a cause of medical conditions, and is also a cause of behaviors that people engage in. I'm going to tell you sort of a little bit about our environmental affordances framework, that the types of behaviors you engage in response to stress are influenced by what your environment makes available to you or promotes in certain ways. Those behaviors kill you, those behaviors cause medical conditions, and the perverse prediction from this model is that if you effectively cope with stress, whether it's through religion or social support or what I'm going to argue, whether you effectively cope with stress by engaging in poor health behaviors, you will have lower risk of depression. So just like we know that people, when you have a stressful event and you cope with it by calling your friends, you're less likely to have some adverse outcome. This, instead of friends, coping now is engaging in these poor health behaviors. So the model rests on three notions. The first is that exposure to stress is associated with risk of both mental and physical health problems, and that when faced with stress, individuals engage in coping behaviors to mitigate that psychological stress experience. We know when we're miserable, and we try to do things about it. But the key thing is that the specific set of stress-responsive behaviors engaged in are shaped by the characteristics of the environment. So sometimes you call your friends, and sometimes you call your bartender, and sometimes you go for a run, and sometimes you go for a beer. And the likelihood that you will engage in any one of those behaviors is influenced by both your sort of specific life history, but then also what is in your environment, what's easier to do. The data for the study come from the Baltimore Epidemiologic Catchment Area Study. This is a prospective population-based sample of adults originally sampled in 1981. Today, there have been four waves of interview, but today I'm only going to talk to you about waves three and four, which occurred in 1993 and 2004. That's largely because some of the variables I need were not collected in the original waves one and two. For depression, we use the diagnostic interview schedule. This is a fully structured diagnostic instrument meant to mimic a psychiatrist diagnosis. We have there are no skips in this this instrument. It's not like the short form CD or something like that. Everyone gets asked every item, and what's very important is that the validity and reliability of this survey this instrument have been specifically evaluated in the Baltimore ECA sample, and it performs equally well relative to clinical interviews for non-Hispanic whites and blacks. Life stress is a summary measure of the occurrence of negative life events. These events are weighted by the expectedness of the event. So we ask people, how likely did you think that event was going to happen, that your spouse was going to die or what have you? And these are placed in time using a life chart interview. I'm going to look at three indicators of coping behaviors, four measures. The first is cigarette smoking, second is excessive alcohol intake, and the final is poor diet, which is indexed by body mass index and frequency of eating balanced meals. And for analysis, the main outcome is depression at follow-up. So depression at 13 years later, predicted by baseline, which is in 1993, predicted by baseline characteristics of stress, poor health behaviors, and their interaction. Now, that interaction term is the thing I'm interested in, my model predicts that interaction term is going to be negative, that people who engage in poor health behaviors in response to stress are going to be less likely to be a case of depression relative to those who do not engage in those. So here's just our data. You can see that expected, that just given what I told you about how social structures and context are related to stress, that blacks report higher levels of life stress. They also are more likely to report engaging in two or more of these poor health behaviors. Almost half of the African-American sample engages in at least two of these behaviors. But just like every other survey I showed you earlier, we see that they have lower rates of depression, lower prevalence of depression syndrome, despite reporting higher levels of distress. So that's the general health questionnaire. We can talk about that later if you have questions, but we also redid the same analysis looking at distress and higher levels of distress. So again, people know they're miserable, but they're not a case of depression. So this is the final model again that I'm predicting. This is predicting the relative odds of being a case of depression at wave four, predicted by characteristics at wave three, which is 13 years prior. The PHB here is poor health behaviors, and I just want you to focus here on the interaction term. You can see for whites, the interaction term is null, 1.04. There's no evidence that poor health behaviors moderate the relationship between stress and poor health behaviors. For blacks in the sample, the interaction term is less than one, suggesting that those individuals who engaged in more health behaviors at a given level of stress were less likely to be a case of depression. And this is what this looks like on a predicted probability scale. On the left are the whites, my far left right there. So whites, you see no evidence. Again, there's no evidence of moderation here between poor, this is life stress and this is the number of poor health behaviors. So green is zero, pink is one, and black is two or more. Among blacks, you see the exact opposite, where the group that had the highest likelihood of being case of depression at follow-up was the group that experienced high levels of stress and had zero of the poor health behaviors, so was not engaging in these poor health behaviors. And so you might be thinking to yourself, but doesn't everyone like Twinkies over Brussels sprouts? You know, it doesn't. Why only in the black sample? Like, why would that be the case? And I'm going to argue that this is due to a differential experience of socioeconomic disadvantage over the life course across social groups. And it just happens that in our country, race is about the best proxy indicator we have for persistent social disadvantage that there is, particularly when we're looking at an urban sample like Baltimore. And it captures the residual. The physical and social environmental factors that are not completely indexed by socioeconomic position. And I'll quote James Jackson here, one of our co-authors, that says, race matters even though we don't know what it is. And I think this sort of suggests that we need, and one of the work that we're doing now is trying to unpack this finding and really figure out what's left there. Why is that there? So just a few implications for efforts to reduce health disparities. The first is that efforts to reduce disparities must consider all aspects of health, both mental and physical. I didn't show you the data here, but we also looked at this same interaction predicting physical health outcomes, and you get what you expect. More stress plus more health behaviors equals more likelihood of getting diabetes. So I don't have time to talk about that today, but we can talk about it later. But in particular, interventions really need to consider not only how disadvantaged environments can be a source of stress, but how coping strategies are shaped shaped by environments constrained by poor infrastructure and limited access to things like health foods and recreational activities. And for those living under chronically stressful conditions, it simply may not be sufficient to promote the prevention or reduction of poor health behaviors alone. This is not a failure of character. It is not that people don't know they shouldn't smoke or that they don't want to live a healthy life. It's that the environment is both a source of stress and a source of means of coping with stress, and those things are killing them. And I suppose that's it. Sorry, I thought I had one more slide. So thank you.